I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Another fascinating offering at the PUSH International Performing Arts Festival is Daughter, co-created by Adam Lazarus, Anne-Marie Kerr, Jivesh Paras Ram, and Melissa D'Agostino. The show is both a humorous and disturbing look at a father's confronting of his identity as a father and a man, and in this time of dealing with toxic masculinity, the show is timely. Adam Lazarus has written and will perform the show Thursday, the 1st of February at 10:30 p.m. at the Fox Cabaret. He joins me now, and I'll get him to preview the production and these important themes that the show contends with. The raising of the daughters and sons of the future, especially when misogyny has been so much a part of the culture, is a concern for all of us. Mr. Lazarus, who informs the show, both with autobiography and fiction, looks at how culpable and complicit men might be. Daughter is presented by Quip Take and Pandemic Theatre from Toronto. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets as well. At AD Lazarus is the Twitter handle. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Adam Lazarus. Mr. Lazarus, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, you know, with everything that's in the news, and when you think about who the President of the United States is, I'm speaking to you from Toronto. Well, I'm in Vancouver. You're in Toronto, and the theater world there has been rocked this first week of January with news about a significant person in that community.
Yeah.
This show, Daughter, seems like an urgent show. It's awfully timely, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think as one of the co-creators, along with Anne-Marie Kerr, Jim Paras Ram, and Melissa D'Agostino, and the writer of the show and performer of the show, we often ask ourselves, is the show good in the way, should we be putting it out in the world? Is it a mean piece? Does it help at all? And then something like Albert Schultz happens, and we are re-reminded at how important it is to shed a bright light on a sinister subject that is not finished yet. We're not done talking about this, and we're not done exposing these kinds of monsters.
Yeah.
And I think the show as well, it opens a space for the monster being a bit more banal. We spoke a lot about the banality of evil while we were creating the show. And so you're met with somebody who's a really nice person and is also quite a monster. So how do we balance that in this world? I don't know the answer to that, but we try to show it as clearly as possible.
Well, now I've obviously read up on the show and how the show was conceived. And I guess you when you started this all, how many years ago was that? 2-3 years ago?
Roughly 3 years ago.
Yeah. And so because the context of the culture was different then as it is now, what was going through your mind, say, the four of you, as you were conceiving of this show? You in particular, because you're the one on stage that,
yeah,
that people will see night on the first. What were you contending with, say?
Yeah. So what I was contending with was the fact that I have a daughter,
mm-hmm,
and I also have a son, and I think it was around Gomeshi.
Right.
Gomeshi had just gotten off,
yeah,
or he had just been exposed, and I thought, what a horrid human being, and I feel like there is no room in this world for him to apologize and retain his power, so he's going to defend himself. He's going to pretend that nothing happened. And that's very scary. And so I thought, how are we going to raise our girls in this world so that in a world that's not built to protect them, that's built to suppress them? And then, so that was my first offer. So I went into a room with Anne-Marie, Melissa, and Jiv, and I said, I had about 40 pages of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't really working, or it was too obvious, or it was too didactic, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's bad. People shouldn't be like this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of boring to watch in a theater. And then I saw a show by Mike Daisy. Do you know Mike Daisy?
No.
Mike Daisy is the guy who did The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs.
A play
a number of years ago.
Right.
That he exposed Apple in China and child labor, and then it was revealed that it wasn't really him that did it.
Yeah.
And then he was sort of blacklisted for a bit. But I was in Philadelphia, and I saw a show that he was doing called Trump Card. And he stood in front of the audience and said, you know, I could tell you stories for an hour and a half about how Donald Trump is this and that and such a horrible human being, but what good would that be? You're all Democrats. You're all theater goers. So rather, instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit here for an hour and a half, and I'm going to tell you why he's going to win the election, and it's your fault.
Right.
And, you know, the chill went through the air just hearing that.
Right.
And I thought, that's what needs to happen with this show is I'm going to show a person who is accepted by everyone. We kind of love him even, just like Gomeshi. We trusted him. We loved him. Nobody called that guy out.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy you meet in Daughter is not as, I don't know what the word is. He's not as much of a monster as in an explicit way. He rides the line. He really rides the line. So just to quickly sum up, what was in my head was I wanted to, as the show has progressed, it's been how do we raise our boys not to be psychotic and do bad things to women? It's not about how do we protect our girls. It's how do we raise boys to not be like power-hungry misogynists.
Yeah, and so I guess you were a new father at that point, or you have two kids. You have a son and a daughter. So
yeah, I was new to being a father for the second time.
I see.
My son had been born.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm someone who doesn't have children. So you'll pardon this question of someone who's been a father twice now. How does your perspective change? How much does it change after having a child?
How does my perspective change after having a child? Everything.
Yeah.
It's the best thing I ever wanted, and I'm doing it, and I'm really happy for that, and my family's great. I think I'm not as selfish anymore as a person. I just want to spend so much time with my family. I also feel like I understand how difficult it can be to just give up everything.
Mm-hmm.
A dear friend of mine said, when you have your first kid, you give 90% of yourself away, and with the second child, you just hand over the last 10%.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're warned before you have kids, oh, my God, you're not going to sleep. It's so hard. It's so this. It's so that. And it is all those things, but who cares? It's actually the best.
Yeah.
I think my kids are going to be fantastic and hopefully better the world and the planet with their however they want to help the world.
Yeah.
That's one answer. I don't know.
Yeah. So they're obviously going to grow up a lot differently than, say, you did.
Yeah.
So I mean, how do you explain the perspective that you have as a man, and not just a father or a husband or even as a child, even of two other parents? What changed? I guess what did you get hip to, or what did you get woke to, that's making their upbringing, your two kids, different than yours?
I'm around more than my father would have been. I'm in the arts, so I express myself in my work a lot versus, you know, immigrant parents who just worked in any profession they could to pay the bills. So there's a lot of privilege that I have with that kind of lifestyle. What am I woke to that my parents weren't woke to? I think, like, we're in a time where we have access to transcendental meditation is common. meditation is common, betterment is something, mindfulness, all of these things that I think I live by and my wife lives by, and we teach as teachers as well. So I think that was so foreign to, again, immigrant Jewish parents, mm-hmm. whose life was like run away from the Nazis and build something so that my kids never have to do that again. And now maybe I'm the next generation of that, of building a, helping to build a world where it's not acceptable to harass women.
Right.
It's not acceptable to talk in certain ways, to be like misogynist behavior is not acceptable. I think that's it. That's what I will do.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think my father. I remember he marched for pro-choice at one point on Herbert Street. And that was, unheard of that a man would do that. So
yeah.
Maybe that was passed down to me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm answering your question specifically.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of my way of trying to figure out, because I've read of the show and I've read reviews of previous productions as to how much of yourself is in the character that you bring to the stage night after night.
I'm blindly not him. Of course you're asking that, right. So what can I say about that? I think, oh my gosh. So is your question, is it me, is it not me?
I guess that's what people are wondering, because you come across from the reviews that I've read, some nights not too good for the audience.
Oh, yeah.
And
so
the other thing I'm wondering, and I'll ask you this later, is how that makes you feel. But as you're cultivating a show like this, as you're creating it, how much of yourself do you have to bear out there in the audience? And because I am very curious to know, because as the show notes says, there's a line there between autobiography and fiction, and I'm wondering, where is that line for you night after night?
I think, we live in a... okay, so there's a few things. Systemically, there's a massive problem with how we treat each other. Or just boys are mean to girls.
Right.
They're bullies. They don't want to feel ashamed about things, so they're nasty. And I think, as a young kid, I was doing that, and I got away with it, and I didn't even realize I was doing anything bad, but I was. And I think there's these subtle forms of misogyny that are contributed to by men and by women. There's a line in the show where it's not me. And I will say, I feel like kind of awkward giving it away, but who cares? You would never guess it will go where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lie. From the beginning, it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
I've carefully constructed a character that is very familiar in his monstrosity. So that makes it easy to play, in a way. I'm acting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an actor in the show. So, but I will say that the events in the show I have experienced myself, maybe not with the same perspective, but I've experienced the same things, or I know them. I know people who have done them, or it's my father, or it's my best friends, or it's my friends' husbands. No story in the show is not real.
And I guess that speaks to the universality of what we've all experienced, because the audience will go to the Fox Cabaret on February 1st and will know you, will know this situation, and that's why it stirs up these feelings that it does amongst
totally.
The audience, right?
And I think the show, essentially, it's not about the guy on stage, it's about you.
Right.
There's a refrain in the show, you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
He says that throughout, right to the very end. And I feel that's the power of the show, is where do you stop forgiving this guy? Do you always forgive this guy? Do you recognize him right to the end? Do you defend him? And I think everybody's reaction or answer to that is valid. That's what's very complicated. One thing I always feel good about when people say, you have presented the problem really clearly. You haven't answered anything.
Yeah.
There's no catharsis in the show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wish I could do that, but really, we wanted to, as I said, shed this light on this sinister subject and hold a mirror up to the audience and say, like, where are you complicit in this kind of behavior?
Yeah.
Because we all are.
Right.
You know, if what did I hear recently? I don't know. Just like imagine that you're Donald Trump's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's your dad still. So, like, how do you cut your father off entirely? Or if it's, you know, like, do you still see the seed in him? Maybe he's a bad example because he's the worst human being. But actually, I take it back. I retract that one.
Yeah.
But just people who ride the line. I don't even want to say Albert Schultz, I feel like, is way past that line.
Yeah.
But there's a line of, here, somebody in the, can I swear on this?
Sure, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So it's this, you're somebody on the team, they're at a bar, and they're just by themselves, and this guy's picking up this girl, and the woman rejects him, and he turns to my friend and says, what a bitch, and my friend is so caught off guard, he goes, ha, 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 and that's it.
Yeah.
And then feels like a terrible person for not having spoken up.
Yeah.
And that speaks to, I think, 2 years ago. I'm hoping that behavior has changed, and when that kind of thing happens, now we start calling it out.
Right.
Or there's a bravery to do that.
Yeah. So this show is obviously a great place to start. So what needs to happen after they walk out of the theater?
Yeah.
I mean, there needs to be, I mean, I realize how this sounds, two guys talking, saying about what sort of space men need to have to be heard. But I do think that is of value, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I also think there's a lot of listening that needs to be done by men. And
absolutely,
that's okay to be quiet for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also why people might find problematic about the show, is that you're listening to another guy talking.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that this show is co-created by two women, and that's very important. And the designer, one of the designers, is a woman as well, and we work very collaboratively. So I'm just saying that. As a defense in many ways, because I think that seeing a man stand up there and post-show, if anyone thinks that I am saying that the behavior is correct and it's complicated, that is not a good analysis of the show.
Right.
What should men do? I think I don't know what space men can speak about how they're feeling or the complication of not knowing how to behave anymore. I think there's organizations who do that work, like White Ribbon is an organization that we've partnered with.
Right.
That it's men teaching boys to not abuse women and learn a different way of speaking, you know, and a different way of behaving. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, see, even before I knew I was going to talk to you, one of my New Year's I don't make New Year's resolutions, but one of the things that I noticed a lot of people when they were posting on Facebook or Twitter, you know, especially when they were posting something, you know, that was emotional, like, you know, these videos that people share online, you know, animals or children doing something remarkable. And then they would say, I was chopping an onion, or there's something in my eye, or, you know what I mean? And so I said, if I'm going to cry this year, however that might come about, whether I'm watching a movie or something like that, I'm just going to say I'm going to cry. I'm not going to say that there's something in my eye or some allergies bullshit, right?
You know, I remember at one point in rehearsals looking into the word sissy. I'm like, where the hell does this word sissy come from?
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from sister. Don't behave like your sister, as though that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And I think men are really weird about, like, being feminine. Why? What are you so worried about? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I think that's an issue, too. It's like, these walls that we create. So, yeah, cry. Oh, my gosh. You were born crying, right?
Right, exactly.
Cried all the time, and then like at some point somebody told you you would be a failure if you cried or showed emotion, and that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's backwards. So, yeah, that's one thing for sure, and I feel like listening, just like shutting up and listening, is okay too. There's I read this yesterday, that you saying, I believe women, men shouldn't get a check mark for that.
Mm.
You should just be satisfied that you did the right thing, period. And then you can go silent. Don't yearn for recognition that you've been doing the right thing. And that kind of thing is very anti-masculine, I think, in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need recognition. We've been told, you know, fight, be the winner. And when that's not happening, we fight more. I think in many ways, something also with the show is it's this cautionary tale that if pinned into a corner, I think the unstable, non-emotional, communicative man is going to be very scary. Because, like, the one that can't talk about their feeling or frustration or being afraid or feeling worthless, you know, those are really, it's really scary. My uncle sent me an article recently that said the biggest plague for middle-aged men is not heart disease or obesity, it is loneliness.
Right.
Because men don't talk to each other about how they feel. We've been trained not to.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy. I think, you know, you asked back to, like, what's different. I'm in the arts, and, you know, communication is what's is the center of what we do.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, I guess the other thing that I'm wondering, because we're living in this time where we're able to women are especially are able to speak out, does this last? And you know, I think it will, but the fact that I have to ask it must seem, for some people, I mean, that's something that they're worried about, isn't it?
I don't understand. Sorry, they're worried about it not lasting.
Yeah, that we'll just go back to what we did years ago, right?
I don't think so. I don't know. I choose to go forward, believing that a cosmic shift or like the greatest civil war is underway, and it will not go back to the way it was. It can't.
Yeah.
You know, what's that expression? What's the mind? A mind once expanded cannot return to its original dimensions.
Right.
There's no. It can't be. It cannot be that we go back. Or at least, I think that my part in it is to be sure and fight to make sure it doesn't.
Yeah.
So going to a dinner party a couple of weeks ago and someone's like, I think we got to beware that some women are going to start coming forward who are just hopping on the bandwagon. And I was like, you've got to be joking that's something that's going through your mind right now.
Yeah.
Every single woman who comes forward right now and says that they've been harassed or abused, we believe them.
Right.
That's it. It's not about, like, finding the 0.00001% who it's untrue for. My wife used to work for United Way, and there was a statistic that came through about, you know, there's that line that says women on welfare have more children to get more welfare. Have you heard that before?
I'm sure I've heard that in a disparaging context, obviously.
It's like this sensationalized headline about and the statistic was 0.005%.
Yeah.
Most people on welfare don't want to be on welfare, but there's this sensationalized aspect that's put forward. So I feel like even this, not everyone will be true. It's a sensational line to say, or that it won't, that we will go backwards. It's like, I think we shouldn't be thinking like that. And the funny thing is, my show is actually not about harassment or consent. It's about this sort of deep systemic mode, problematic mode that we're in as men and women, what we've supported or held up for years. That's has to be undone or rethought. And I think it's underway. I don't know. I think people come see the show and they feel like it's a wake up call, or they feel like it's perfectly represents the problem that they have faced. And many men walk out feeling rocked because it's this banality. We don't even know that we're doing it, but we do it.
Have you worked in Vancouver before, Adam?
Yeah, I have. I've been at Push Off once a couple of years ago with a show called The Art of Building a Bunker that I made with Guillermo Verdecchia. And then I was there, I think, 2 years ago with that same show, The Art of Building a Bunker. I love Vancouver.
Yeah. So you work in Toronto, and so I'm wondering, because we're familiar with the Toronto scene, if only we're subscribers to the Globe and Mail and read reviews and the sort. Is there a difference in the audience, especially that goes to the theater here as opposed to where you're from?
Can you answer that?
No, see, I've never been to Toronto, so that's the other thing that I'm always wondering about when I talk to guys like you from there.
I can say something. I actually can. The last show I did, which was in Vancouver, was called The Art of Building a Bunker, and it was basically like daughter but dealing with race and, you know, problems with subtle and not-so-subtle forms of racism.
Right.
And I loved the Vancouver audience. It was fantastic. They were also quite moved by it, engaged by it, stuck around and asked questions and wanted to engage in the conversation. So I thought it was remarkable. Sometimes I think that your theater scene is cooler than ours, because I think that you have wilder formats of presenting theater. Sometimes I think Toronto's focus is very narrative-based, and the playwright is king, whereas there's more interest in obscure forms of storytelling. Or I shouldn't say obscure, just different forms of storytelling in Vancouver, which I find very exciting.
Now, you mentioned audience members sticking around, and I'm sure you're getting a lot of feedback for Daughter. What's that like after, say, bearing yourself on stage, acting on stage as you do, to talk about the show with the audience that's just seen it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's a bit of a social responsibility that I have to stick around as well. The first question most people ask, or they want to know, is what parts were you, what parts were not you?
Right.
And I think what I've discovered on that is people want to know what are they identifying with, fiction or nonfiction. So that's that. I think, it's hard. That's the simple answer. But people felt they really wanted to stick around and talk. So I think... I'd say what I don't like is when people want to give me dramaturgical advice. You know, that's always tricky.
Right.
But people, I'd say I'm talking a bit in circles, but in synapses. When we did the SummerWorks production 2 years ago, we had a talk back after every show because we found that the audiences needed a space. Compress.
Right.
I found those quite difficult because people were either asking me was it real or not, or they wanted to give me dramaturgical advice or tell me what was wrong with the show, which I don't want to know, you know. I'm not interested in that. It's too tough to hear that stuff. But engaging about the conversation of what is happening in the world, I love that. You know, because I think that's what good art does, is it rips you open a little bit, and then you talk about how do we exist going forward. So in Toronto, we had the White Ribbon, and a member of the White Ribbon and Transition House, which is a women's shelter in Toronto. They stuck around, and we had a panel discussion or an interview scenario where we just spoke about the issues surrounding the play. And that felt great. that felt really good because people, there are people and organizations that are helping do the work that we discuss in the show.
Mm.
We present it as a piece of art. There's a line that I was saying that this is how I talk about the problems I see in the world is through theater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write essays. I don't speak at rallies. I make theater. But what to do after that, I don't know. But I think it has become our responsibility as theater makers, specifically around this show, to offer connections to organizations or further reading about the subject. You know, people don't know what to do with difficult subject matter. They get rocked and then they get mad or so sad and don't know where to go.
Right.
So with the show, we have a zine that we've made.
Uh-huh.
So artist reactions and some written material about the form of theater that we're trying to create by doing the show, as well as organizations that people can talk to.
Adam, I just realized I could talk to you all afternoon.
I know. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not so succinct.
No, this is great because obviously this is an important show, and this is something that people ought to see when it comes to town February 1st. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Daughter is on at the Fox Cabaret Thursday, the 1st of February, 10:30 p.m. That's all part of the Push Festival. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets. Adam Lazarus joined me on the line from Toronto in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.